It cannot be denied that the world around us is constantly changing, and the impact that the internet and social media have had on how we communicate with one another isn't just a big change, it is a massive change. On today's episode of the MyCom Church Marketing Podcast, we're speaking with Phil Bowdell. He's the author of the new book, Rethink Communication, a playbook to clarify and communicate everything in your church. Thank you to everybody for listening. My name is Dan Wunderlich. I'm a United Methodist pastor, and as I said, our guest today is Phil Bowdell. Phil is the creative arts pastor at Westridge Church in Northwest Atlanta. And while Westridge isn't a United Methodist church, Phil's UMC connections run deep. He grew up as a UMC preacher's kid. He's worked on staff at a United Methodist church. And today he coaches and consults with all kinds of churches and leaders, United Methodists among them. Phil, thanks so much for being with us today.
Hey, my pleasure. Thanks so much for having me.
Yeah, let's begin by having you share a bit about yourself, your experience in ministry, and why you chose to write this book.
Yeah, so my roots run deep in the church. Like, I grew up on the front pew of the church with my dad being a Methodist pastor in the West Ohio area. And so I typically found myself each Sunday making funny faces at my dad while he was preaching. And he even developed like this certain cough that I knew when he did this cough, it meant, shut up, Philip. It's time for you to like be quiet. I'm trying to preach. Yeah. So yeah. I remember that well. So yeah. So I grew up in the church. I always had a passion for music, for creativity. I loved, I wanted to be in the next DZ Talk. I wanted to be doing music and something creative. And so honestly, a lot of my growing up life, I didn't spend a whole lot of time thinking I could ever apply that to the church. And it took took till our youth ministry days where I got a chance to take my passion for creativity and music and start applying that into leading music, building our website, doing funny videos for church and starting to see like, hey, there's a place for the things that God's wired me for in the church. And so God really opened my eyes for that. And so long story short, went to school for media communication at Asbury University and got to study that. And right after school, I moved down to Montgomery, Alabama and worked at Fraser United Methodist Church for a couple years. And that's where I got started in that role there as the director of digital media and just over everything online at that point. I think at that point, the church had a front page website. And so I got to update a few things and make some progress there. And just shortly after that, God led me to where I'm at now at Westridge Church. So I spent the first 4 years there as the communications director. And again, I got to go there and build the communications team from scratch. They never had anybody in a role like that. So I got to really put everything in place and try to keep my head above water while doing it. And then I transitioned into the role that I'm in now, which is creative arts pastor. So what I get to do is oversee all of our worship, production, video, communication, really just kind of leading the charge in our services and what we do and overall just try to help tell one story through what we're doing as a church. So, but more than anything, my passion, what I get to do through the things that I put my energy into is I just want to see the church put Jesus on display in everything they communicate and everything that we do. And so that's really what drew me to writing this book, Rethink Communication. And my heart for it really was I was growing up in the church, knowing so many people in ministry, I was continuing to hear pastors and, you know, youth pastors and volunteers in different areas, just all talking about the same things, the same barriers that they were experiencing. And what I was seeing the roots of with all those things is communication really was the central issue behind all of those things. And so what I wanted to do is to try to write a book that was designed around helping be a bridge for all church leaders and all pastors, whatever your church size is, whatever your role is. I wanted to try to write a book that would be a bridge for those church leaders to understand the new reality for how people attend and engage in the church and their attention span even and how that's changed and help them give a playbook for how you can communicate in today's culture. So that's overall what I tried to accomplish in Rethink Communication and try to get super practical to help church leaders because I know I haven't talked to many church leaders that just have like tons of time on their hands. So right. I wanted to write something short, practical, use the communication kind of tools that would hopefully connect with them and give them some really practical stuff they can apply today.
Well, and I know if our listeners look up your church, they're going to see that it's a fairly large church and you've got a staff and you've got teams that you run. But some of this you built from the ground up, and I hope you'll back me up on this, but my feeling is that for probably the majority of churches out there, there are people that either have some of these skills or have a desire to learn and can learn these skills and can serve as volunteers on a communications team. It doesn't all have to be staff members. There may be people who are currently shaking hands at the door that would much rather be running your social media, or there may be people not volunteering at all because they have these skills and just have never been invited to do them. Do you have any tips on building a team, or just an encouragement that there are people out there to help you if you're feeling overwhelmed?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, when I was just trying to get things started with social media, I prayed probably for over a year for the right person, the right volunteer to help come alongside me and help lead that area. And so it took some time and some prayer and knowing what to look for. You know, one day I just found a great friend of mine. And what I found out is she was really good at writing witty Facebook comments and Facebook posts. And she just had a knack for writing things in a clever way. And so I sat down with her and said, "Hey, what do you think about using the gifts that you have for social media at our church?" And she's like, "Wait, what gifts are you talking about? And how in the world can I use that for the church? That I've never known social media as like a volunteer position." And I think it was totally off her radar. But really, it was just me taking a moment to recognize a gift that somebody had and empowering them and equipping them to be able to use that for ministry. So there are tons of people out there that have some gifts that probably most likely don't think that they can use that gift to serve in the church, because it doesn't look like greeting somebody at the front door, or handing out a bulletin, or serving on a parking team or anything like that. So I think first is just opening your own eyes to realize, hey, it may look different than it used to, but also just recognizing, man, there's some people out there that have a gift in the marketplace that they're in, or just have a gift that God's given them that they can use for ministry. So I think there's definitely opportunities out there that don't require a new salary or a new person that you got to bring on your staff, for sure.
Absolutely. Well, early in the book, you write that the average church hasn't changed the way it communicates in the last 30 years. And there may be some of our listeners who think, well, at least we have a website and a Facebook page, so this doesn't apply to me. But it isn't just about the tools that we use, but it's how we use them. So what's the primary difference between a church that's communicating like it's 1989 and a church that's connecting today?
Yeah. So obviously the tools may look different than they did before, but I think the burden that I would carry there is that the average church is still communicating that in a playbook that used to work, that just no longer works anymore. And that playbook looks like this. They would communicate in a way, assuming that people are attending every week. They would be communicating in a way that they're assuming that they have people's soul attention when you're communicating to them. Also, they're communicating in a way that they assume that that person cares about what you're saying. And so all of those things aren't always untrue, but often they are in today's culture. And so let's look at attendance for the first here. So it used to be that you could assume the average person would attend almost every week. And now if you look at church trends, you know, across denominations and really all over culture, we're seeing people not attend every week, but sometimes it's every 2 to 3 weeks or even every 4 to 6 weeks. Mm. And obviously there's those people that are coming twice a year and you know when those times are. But right. So what happens if we don't recognize that is, and this was a challenge even just for me, is realizing, okay, if the average person is coming to our church every 4 to 6 weeks, that means that we have 8 to 10 times a year to communicate with that person inside the walls of our church. And so what I had to wrestle with is, goodness, what needs to change for us to be able to still reach that person where they are? So that's an old, like if you're communicating, assuming that people are there every week, that's an old playbook that needs to be changed. The other piece around attention that I think a lot of churches haven't made the adjustment for is that they're assuming because it's important to them when they're communicating their events or their opportunities in the church. If you get up on stage or share things in a bulletin and you assume that just because it's important to you and accidentally make the assumption that it's important to other people as well, then we can make some assumptions that no longer work in getting our message across. So people now are not looking for more things to do. They're looking for value and purpose, and they're looking to solve problems in their life. And so it's not about if you're trying to get more people into your Sunday school, it's not just saying, "Hey, we want you to be involved in Sunday school now." It's we want to say, hey, do you want, as a church, we want to come alongside you and get really practical about helping you grow in your faith. So here's an opportunity to do that. And here's how we can help partner with you and help you along the way. So there's a lot of things that has just changed in our culture. And obviously, I mean, even social media and all these things, they have rewired our brains on how we receive communication. Because I learned through writing this book, the average person receives over 10,000 branded messages a day. I'm pretty sure it was not that much 30 years ago, but because of that, we are all just trying to survive in some ways over what we can put our attention to. And so I think we just, as the church, we have to work more intentionally and harder than ever before for our message to cut through the noise and give our audience a chance to hear and respond to that message.
Oh, absolutely. I sometimes joke with my wife, sometimes I'll stay up way too late scrolling on my phone and she'll be like, what happened? Like, you know, why were you up until 11:30? And I was, because Twitter doesn't end. Like every time you ask for something new, it gives you something new. So there's so much out there. Yep. And another factor of digital communication is that it has opened up two-way communication, where mm-hmm. before the 1989 church strategy is the megaphone, now it's a two-way conversation. Why is this such an important shift for us to keep in mind?
Well, the reality is, I mentioned in the book, it's almost like if somebody knocked on your front door of your church, you would want to answer, right? Like if that was that person's first time wanting to connect to your church, of course, you would want to open the doors. You'd want to welcome them. You'd want to see if they have any questions. You want to make them feel comfortable, right? And so that strategy worked. And it was a lot easier 30 years ago when we were building our communication strategy and ministry strategy really around what would happen when somebody came inside the walls of our church. The reality is now is people are knocking on the doors of our church, but they're doing that through a Facebook message. They're doing that through a comment. They're doing that by looking at our website. They're looking in through our windows through digital means. And the reality is if we don't make some adjustments for how we communicate, the challenge is we're basically not answering the knock on the door that people are having. Mm. And so when I think about, you know, our own church and things that we're learning, most people that come to our church for the first time, they have been checking out our messages online or they've checked out our website. And some of them have even been following along with our teaching or live stream or things like that. They've been doing that not for a week, but for months before they ever step foot into the walls of our church. And so I think for us, if we don't realize that that's where people are first, we could unintentionally miss out on the opportunities that we have to actually connect with that person. Because basically, if we aren't thinking about the digital side of things, we aren't there to hear the knock on the door. And so I think that's why it's so essential for us to just open our eyes a little bit to seeing how people are communicating differently now in a more digital way.
Absolutely. And if you're the solo pastor, or you're an associate pastor in charge of social media, obviously it's a bit easier for you to think about it as a ministry. But if you're a staff member or a volunteer, you know, your pastor probably doesn't have time for you to forward every email or every Facebook message or every comment to them for response. So really, in a sense, the church comms department over the last decade and the church comms volunteers have gone from a production department to really a ministry. They've always been a ministry, but it's much easier to see and much more important to live into that identity now, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. I think there's more ministry opportunity in the area of communication than ever before. And I kind of lay out in the introduction that the reality is so much has changed in the church, and it is challenging, especially for an overwhelmed church leader that's just trying to care for people and to minister to people, that it can be overwhelming with all the things that have changed to try to figure out where to start. And so on one hand, it's a little bit overwhelming to realize that the culture of the church has changed so much. What I try to call people to and invite people into is realizing that if you're thinking like a missionary now in today's culture, you could see some of the greatest opportunities that you've ever had in communicating the gospel with the tools that God's given us today. And so never before have we had a chance in communication to reach somebody and pray for somebody at the click of a button. You know, never have we been able to communicate a message to dozens or hundreds or thousands of people at one chance, just to be able to help connect with people and say that you see them and you care for them and that there's a place for them at your church. And so, yeah, communication used to be more about the administrative assistant helping get the bulletin together. But that is all service department mentality. When now I think if you could look at the opportunities that we have with fresh eyes, I think we'd say that this is much more of a ministry than a service department.
Absolutely. Well, what I love about your book, Phil, is that it balances both communication theory and incredibly practical ideas. So let's dive into one example of each. And you have a chapter on clarifying the message. You invite us to ask three questions. The first two are questions we all know we should ask whether we actually do or not, and that is, who is our target audience and what does a win look like both for us as the church and for them as our audience or a congregation or our community? But the third question is one that I will admit is kind of a blind spot for me. I so often forget to ask it, and yet it's so critical, and that is, what are the barriers in the way of communication and achieving the win? Can you talk a bit about this question and the concept of barriers to communication?
Why I think that question is so important is, at the end of the day, I think if you have a one sentence job description for communication of identifying and removing barriers from helping people take their next step, I think that's a great rallying cry for communication in the church. Because at the end of the day, what we're trying to do is help people take their next step. And behind every step, there's a barrier. There's something holding somebody back from taking that next step. And good communication helps break down those barriers. So let me give you an example from our church and something that we are really intentional with communicating. So our church is relatively big. So there's a chance that somebody could walk in and say, you know, how could I ever be known here? How could people know me, and how can I connect here? And, you know, where do I start? So one of the things that we're very intentional about is trying to break down that barrier of doing anything we can to create one-to-one connections in our communication and into the flow of our services even. So we are very intentional about making sure that everybody is seen and connected with. But even when it layers into like our small group strategy and getting people connected into discipleship, what we want everybody to know when we communicate with them over trying to get them involved in those opportunities is to say one phrase, and that's, there's a place for you. And there's a reason that we pick that phrase, because there's a lot of people that say, hey, I don't know where to start. It's because some of the biggest barriers behind getting in a group that we were identifying was, you know, I don't know where to start, or depending on my stage of life, I'm not sure which group I should be in. But the two biggest barriers that we found in group communication, the first one was time. And the second one was childcare, because they felt like, one, they were too busy, so how could I commit to another thing that happens each week? And the second one was childcare, of figuring out, hey, I can't afford paying $50 every week for childcare. Right. So, you know, what do I do? So those are our barriers. So we could say all day long, hey, we want you to be in a group. But if we aren't communicating in a way to help overcome those barriers that people are feeling, then we aren't going to get very far with our messaging. So what we had to do is build a message around something like, there's a place for you. And to say, hey, to tell stories from people that have overcome those barriers, and to provide opportunities as we communicate to say, hey, we have opportunities inside the walls of our church each week where there's childcare provided. So don't let that be a barrier from helping you get connected into a group this year. So if we didn't take the time to identify the barriers, we wouldn't have had the time to communicate intentionally to identify and remove those barriers. So that's why I think it's so important. If you want to help communicate to help people take action, you have to know what's slowing them down. You have to know what are those things that are going to hold them back from your message. And then you have to take the time to actually break down those barriers in your communication. Or sometimes you have to break down those barriers by changing your ministry strategy at times, because sometimes your communication issue is really a ministry strategy issue that needs to be overcome. So that's why that question is just a great starting point sometimes, regardless of what you're doing, is to just ask the person you're trying to reach, hey, what's holding you back from attending this event or connecting in the church in this way or becoming a member, and helping for you as the church understand that target audience and figuring out what they're trying to do. If you can understand their barriers, it will completely change how you communicate to them.
That is so true. And we've relaunched life groups recently in the church that I pastor. And we have a volunteer who used to run a small group program at a large Methodist church up in the Virginia area. And that was one of the first things she said was, childcare is the number one barrier to small groups. And it's one of those things that you might not think of, especially if you're not a parent or you haven't had, you know, small kids at home in a while, but that's such a good word. And Phil, I also love you touch on this a little bit in the book. There are those philosophical barriers and logistical barriers, but sometimes what falls on our shoulders as church communications folks are also technical barriers. So for example, on the Connect card, the more information you ask for, the lower return of Connect cards. You think about Amazon one-click ordering. It's so genius because every new screen we have to go into is another opportunity for us to decide not to buy the thing, where if we buy it with the first click. And the same thing might be true for giving to the church. If you've got to register a new account and approve things and all this stuff, can you talk a bit about the unfortunately frustrating but necessary technical barriers we've got to overcome?
Yeah. All those things are things I've certainly experienced. And what draws my heart in something like that is that sometimes as ministry leaders, we have to make the decision on, do we want to make this harder for us internally, you know, as a staff or as pastors, or do we want to make this harder on all the people we're trying to reach? And sadly, I think we sometimes lean towards, that's not how our database works. So we've got to add all these questions, or that's not how this part works. So this is going to add more time on the administrative side. So we can't do that. When the reality is, like, we are there to help people take their next step. We are there to help make disciples. And for us, it's our responsibility to simplify and remove barriers from anything that would help that happen. So I think for us, we do have to make that tough call sometimes of saying, what can we do that may take more work on our end to make it simple and easy for that person to respond to the message you're communicating? And I think that happens all the time with digital communication or print or whatever. And I think reality is sometimes we do that by just giving people too much, you know, giving them too many opportunities, too much information that we want from them. And it's just crippling because most people are already coming into your church overwhelmed in what's going on in their lives. So if you are overwhelming them with what you need from them, instead of communicating what you want for them and helping give them a simple way to respond, then I think we're missing opportunities to connect with them.
Okay, for the practical idea, I want to dig into something that we all love to hate, and that is church announcements. And I want to take us right to a quote that jumped off the page for me. This is Phil Bowdle, spitting fire. Fairness should not be a value in church communication. This is a hot take, Phil. What do you mean by this?
I don't know what you're talking about, by the way. Everybody loves church announcements. So fairness should not be a value in church communication because not everything that you're communicating is of the same weight, is the same importance. And I think it really starts not with us as a church. It starts with the person we're trying to reach. And I think the person coming inside the walls of your church, or the person that's connecting with you online, anybody that's connecting to your church, they're looking at you asking you, hey, I don't have time for everything, but I want to know from you what's important to you. What are the important things that you want me to engage with as a church? And if you can't answer those questions of what's important to you as a church, because the way you answer it is, well, everything's important. Well, yeah. The reality is when everything's important, nothing's important. Everything carries the same weight, which just means it all gets overwhelming. And so what happens is some of the most important opportunities that you put your energy into get lost with the things that are the least important. And so let me say this, because I think it's important to say every ministry has value. Every ministry has importance. And so the person that is doing that Bible study for four people has value and is really important. But I would say that ministry, if you're communicating that ministry on from stage right next to saying, hey, we have Easter coming up and this is the biggest outreach opportunity we have all year long to invite people and to invite your neighbors to come to church with you. If you're spending as much time on both of those, then you're missing opportunities to really emphasize those most important things. And so I think the realization that I had for me is I had to create some standards that just would help guide these conversations. And that didn't mean that we wouldn't communicate the smaller things. It just means that we had to communicate them in an appropriate way so that they didn't overcrowd the most important things that we were doing. Well, so what the guiding principle is for me in communication for figuring out what's most important is saying, I want every person in our church that's connected to our church, whether they attended church that Sunday or didn't, I want every person to know what the one to two most important things that are going on in our church right now. And if we can communicate in a way that every person would know those one to two things, then we're doing something right. Like, then we're doing something to emphasize those one to two things. Because reality is, if that person didn't come to church that Sunday, but we were able to communicate those one to two things on social media and email and any of the other communication channels, then we still have a way to emphasize those most important things that are going on in our church. But if we said, hey, here's the 15 most important things happening, there's no way, as an overwhelmed staff and church leaders, there's no way that we can do those justice. And so that's why I think focusing on those most important things allows you to emphasize that and get the most engagement. We found, even as a church, like if we add 3 to 4 on a Sunday, our engagement tanks on everything. It's not just goes down a little bit, it goes down a lot, because people are just looking for that clear, practical next step that they can take during at church. And so we have to do the hard work to be able to isolate those few things that are most important.
And that's what I wanted to bring up, is this idea that, and there are probably programs or ministries within your church where an announcement from the platform or from the pulpit or from the stage is actually not the most effective way to communicate it anyway. Mm-hmm. Even if it is the one announcement for the week, there may be a better way of focusing people's attention and trying to communicate that. You and I are both plugged into the church communications world, and I'm sure you've seen this. There are people that have come up with the most complicated systems for, like, they give ministries like budgets of like communication units, and this costs 5 units and this costs 3 units, or, you know, setting up all these kind of hierarchies. What are some of the just the simple standards that you have, and how do you help ministry leaders and volunteers in your church understand that they might get more bang for their communications buck through other channels?
One thing that's really important to me as a ministry leader helping make those decisions is I want to make sure every ministry in our church has a clear on-ramp that we can communicate and push people to. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, missions is not something that every single person in our church is going to respond to, but it's vital to our church and it's vital to our culture. So if we aren't communicating that, we're missing something. So for us, that means 3 times a year, we are intentional with 2 weeks in a row, we are communicating the mission opportunities that we have in our church. So for what that means for that ministry, the missions team, is what they know is, hey, we aren't going to get mentioned every week, but we are going to go all out and make sure that we are intentional about leveraging those 2 seasons when we're getting promotion across our church. And we're going to be intentional about sharing stories and capturing stories and making sure all of our stuff is ready to get as much engagement as we can in those on-ramp seasons. So to step back, like, again, I think the most important thing there is to make sure that every ministry does have some kind of on-ramp that does get church-wide presence. But so there's 3 guiding principles that I share in the book around how I filter those decisions. One is, for an announcement, does it reach over 80% of the audience that you're communicating to? And so that small group of 5 people that is doing the cookout that wanted a church announcement probably does not reach 80% of the people attending your church that day. Right. So that, there's probably a better way for that person to communicate to those 5 people and encourage them to bring a friend with them, rather than counting on the person at the stage to communicate that for everybody else. So that 80% rule is really important. The second one is, is this the direct next step from our teaching, from the message that day? So, mm-hmm. you know, if you're communicating about the area of like addiction, well, you may not communicate Celebrate Recovery that happens in your church every single week. It may not be in your bulletin every single week. But if you know you're going to be talking about it that Sunday, that doesn't feel like a big announcement when you share, hey, we have an opportunity for you as a church, if you're struggling in this area and you need some help. That doesn't feel like an announcement. That feels like you as a church coming alongside those people that were right. impacted by that message. And it's a practical next step. So you don't have to withdraw from people. You're actually depositing value for them to know, hey, this is something that I'm proud my church has, and I may need it, or somebody else next to me may need that. So 80% of the audience, direct next step from teaching, or a primary on-ramp to ministry. And so for our context, even we don't announce our student ministry events every single week. We count on our student ministry to communicate their student ministry events to their student ministry, right. because that is reaching 80% of their audience. But a couple times a year, especially for our big summer camp, we want to make sure that we're communicating to our whole entire church that this is the biggest student event that we do all year, and it's absolutely worth getting your students involved in. And so again, they go all out on communicating that and leveraging that, but that helps become an on-ramp to that student ministry all year long. And so it really starts to filter a lot of the things out that are currently crowding out the communication space that you may have. If you can just have a few guiding principles like that, that fit the criteria for something you would announce on a Sunday. And then it helps the ministry leaders or volunteers that are running those things to just have some guardrails to know, hey, here's the things that we announce churchwide, and everything else, we're encouraging you to use the tools that you have to communicate your ministry to your target audience.
Well, Phil, there's so much in this book we didn't get a chance to cover, including a wealth of charts and calendars and worksheets. And in the book itself, you give us examples filled out about how you and your team uses them, but there's also instructions about how to recreate them yourself or even download blank versions that we can use in our own ministries. This is such a great and helpful book. Is there anything lastly that you'd like to say about it, or just share with us how we can get a copy for ourselves or for our teams?
Yeah, I mean, I think my encouragement and the reason I wrote this is that it would be super practical for you to be able to use in your church. And I know my heart goes, this was written for the overwhelmed church leader of just trying to figure out how they can communicate their message. Because I think we all know, and I share this at the beginning, like the church doesn't have a message problem. We have the greatest message ever. But the challenges that we have now is the church is facing a message delivery problem. And so what I try to just lay out the book is, as you mentioned, is just giving some really practical ways that you can communicate your message more effectively. And so I hope it will do that the way that's there's a lot of practical things that are laid out that you can tweak from and use for your church right away. And so, but I also leave my cell phone number in there as well at the end, for something we didn't mention, partly just to, for you to know, hey, if you have a question or you're stuck in something, reach out to me, let me know, because I'm here for you and want to be able to help. So if you want to check out the book, you can go to rethinkcommunicationbook.com, and all the links are there for Amazon, for iBooks, for anywhere you can download it there. So that will give you all the resources you need to be able to check out the book. And I do encourage you, if you can, to not just get this book for you, to get this book for any primary ministry leaders or team members that you have, and make this a team read, because communication isn't just somebody's job now, it's everybody's job. And so I think this will hopefully be a bridge for a, you know, ministry team of volunteers or ministry leaders to be able to be on the same page and give you a path forward and some language to use on how you can communicate your message more effectively. So again, I'm not doing that to sell more books. It's not about that. And everybody knows that the writes books knows it's not about, you don't really make money on these. So I do, right. I just know it's so critical that it's not just one person that knows this, but it's a team that's got the same language that they can use to leverage that to communicate their message more effectively.
Awesome. Well, Phil, thank you so much for your time and sharing all your wisdom with us today.
I really appreciate it. Thanks so much.
And now, listeners, we want to hear from you. What parts of today's conversation resonated with you? What challenges do you face when it comes to communication, and what strategies have you employed to overcome them? Email us at podcast@umcom.org, and we just might share your story or your thoughts on a future episode. And of course, you can always use that email, podcast@umcom.org, to send us any feedback or topic suggestions you have for the show. We love hearing from you. Finally, if you found this podcast to be helpful and you'd like to make sure other church communicators like yourself find this resource, the two biggest things you can do are to share this episode with your friends and colleagues and leave a review on the Apple Podcasts, Google Play Music Store, or whatever service you're using to listen to us right now. Thanks again for listening to the MyCom Church Marketing Podcast.